SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS News.
Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, thanks for joining SBS.
Yeah, good to be back.
Tony Burke, the Australian Institute of Criminology has compiled this report into the treatment of women in Southeast Asian cyber scamming centres. What shocked you the most about the details?
We always hear about Australians being scammed, and we talk a lot about that. What we often don't understand is that the person on the other end of the computer can be being exploited in the most horrific way as well. These scam centres, they started around 2010, but they really took off over COVID when organised criminals were looking for an opportunity and a whole lot of us were spending our time online. And when someone's being scammed through a fake social media profile and they think they're forming a relationship from Australia, what they don't realise is that at the other end of the computer, they're probably most of the time having a conversation with a series of different men, not the woman who they think they're talking to. And then eventually, if they do have a video conversation, effectively the woman they're talking to will have a series of different people who she's impersonating, but also she herself is very likely to be horrifically exploited. We're talking about circumstances where women have their passports taken, where they are effectively imprisoned, where they have no rights at all and are effectively in a slavery situation. The people who are scammed, it's not just you losing your money. You are also funding an entire operation which is destroying the lives of women overseas.
Some of these reports, you know, document women, girls as young as 11 being drawn into these so-called pig butchering romance scams, rape and electric shock being used as punishment. Do you see any potential role for the Australian authorities to assist in some way in trying to destroy this business model?
There's a tremendous amount that our authorities do, and in particular, this has been one of the frontline issues of the Bali process, which is co-chaired with Australia and Indonesia. So we've had a real focus on regional cooperation, and there's more work that's been done through ASEAN as well. Effectively, whenever we act on child protection, we are not only protecting Australian children, we find ourselves protecting children all around the world. These scam centres are one of the key destinations of exploitation within Asia. And as I say, this starts where someone receives, you know, maybe on their social media account, a direct message from someone who they don't know. It looks like a legitimate account. They communicate back and forth over a period of months, then at some point they get told, oh, look, would you be able to send me some money? I've run into trouble. They feel they have formed a relationship with a person. What they have no idea about is they've been dealing with a series of people, and most of them have been horrifically exploited, are being imprisoned, are being abused, are living in circumstances which are nothing to do with the social media account that's there to scam. You are looking here at organised crime creating pain in every single direction. And that's why Australia is well engaged with our partners in Asia to be able to take on and deal with these scam centres. But a big part of that is also to try to stop Australians from engaging in these scams, for people to be eyes wide open. There is nothing more effective in destroying these centres than killing the market itself.
So what's your message to those Australians who right now might be getting contact from someone in Southeast Asia trying to start up some kind of romantic arrangement about the measures and the steps they need to take to both protect themselves and the person at the other end of that conversation?
If you get a direct message from somebody who you don't know, don't presume that that message is from anyone other than a criminal. That's a simple message. The people are well trained, and what's happening now is a whole lot of the clues that used to be there, where the communication might have been clearly flawed or something like that. Artificial intelligence tools now are allowing people to be able to act like they've been in Australia. They may well be speaking back to you with an Australian accent that artificial intelligence is driving, but you just start with the principle. If the message comes through into your direct messages but on your social media feed and it's someone you don't know, you need to work on the basis you will never know them. You need to work on the basis that not only are you taking a risk yourself, if you let yourself be taken down this path, you are potentially involving yourself in supporting some of the worst forms of exploitation and organised crime that we have in the region.
Can I take you to some broader areas of your portfolio? The opposition has proposed an immigration crackdown in the last week. Do you agree with Angus Taylor that people who come to Australia need to assimilate?
The concept of immigration is people, when they come to Australia, want to be part of Australia. That's what people want. And I've never accepted the word assimilation. I don't want people to lose who they are. The word integration is one that's being used as part of a multicultural dialogue for a very long time. And that's what it is. Like, we want people for who they are. I've never subscribed to that sort of melting pot concept that your whole identity is meant to be dissolved. The speech from Angus Taylor sort of had a series of different elements. He called for us to do some things that already happened and claimed it was new policy, but then he had some language there that was about telling people they don't belong, and in particular claiming somehow that you are more worthy if you come from a liberal democracy than if you don't, I think is one of the most horrific things I've heard someone putting themselves forward for national leadership say.
When it comes to the people who are in visa limbo, that's a particular cohort that the opposition has spoken about wanting to provide a list of safe countries for deportation. Do you agree that there does need to be some process to speed up deportations of people who are in that visa limbo situation after coming to Australia by boat? And should there be a separate treatment for the children who didn't make a decision as an adult to make that journey?
Well, for a start, let me start a couple of steps back from where you are, because there's a lot to unpack in what you've just said. First of all, the concept is not whether or not a country is safe. The concept is whether a country is safe for that particular individual. And there are a series of cases that can be dealt with very quickly. And effectively what we've done is we've reversed the order. So it used to be that everything was considered in a queue, and that meant that everyone was pretty much guaranteed, once you started on this process, that you get 7 to 10 years in Australia just by playing all the legal games, even if you didn't have any merit to your application at all. We've turned that on its head, and now the most recent applications get processed first. So what's happening now is, instead of people being able to rot the system with claims that have no merit and think that they'll be here for 10 years, you're finding around about in a 12-month space of time for a whole lot of cases, we can go through all of the processes and it's done, and then the deportation process starts. We are not a country who will send people to danger, and we've been building the relationship with a series of countries where they are now willing to take people where there had been resistance for a long time in terms of taking their own citizens as returns. So a whole lot of that we have been doing. But let's not forget why we're in this situation. Like, we're in this situation because almost no processing had happened for 9 years. So the number of people who are getting towards the end of this process is growing at the moment because we're getting through them. And for Angus Taylor to say, oh, look, there's all these people here, this is the problem, really misses the point that the numbers we are dealing with right now are very much a direct result of the neglect that happened for 9 years in not moving these cases through.
Tony Burke, just given the level of anger and the opposition's very public concerns, can you explain the controls and vetting process for people from Gaza before they were granted entry to Australia?
So anybody who has come from Gaza, in the first instance, what happened was they were checked against the movement alert list. which is informed by ASIO and managed by the Department of Home Affairs. Second thing that happened was for them to be able, we then did specific referrals of the entire caseload to be checked by ASIO, and a second time we did specific referrals of the entire caseload to be checked by ASIO. Anyone who then left through the RAFA crossing also had to go through a crossing which is controlled by both Egypt and Israel. That you go through any cohort of people who come to Australia, you will not find a group that has had more thorough checking and vetting than the group that has come from Gaza. And the argument that they want to put suspicion on people because they have come from a part of the world which is being controlled by a brutal regime. Well, the same applied to people who came under Tony Abbott from Syria. The same applied from people who were fleeing Vietnam. There have been a series of occasions where this sort of branding that's being done by Angus Taylor simply did not occur because we are a good and decent country. We need to make sure that people who would be a threat to the country do not come in. But there has never been a group more closely vetted than this particular group. And effectively what Angus Taylor is wanting to do is to get groups of Australians to turn against each other. That's not who we are as a country.
Can I take you to the women and children who are part of the IS caliphate currently still in the Syrian detention camp? The women have repeatedly said they are willing to cooperate with law enforcement if they reach Australia, as has been the case for those who have come previously. So why is this no longer sufficient for your government?
Well, they're wanting more than that. They're wanting the Australian government to take active steps to bring them here. And the government's not willing to do that.
Which was the case for previous cohorts. So what is the difference here?
Well, there have been. Don't forget, they were there when the other individuals were brought back. So there has never been a willingness from any Australian government to make active decisions for these particular individuals. That's the position of the Australian government.
Is it because they're more dangerous, Minister? Is that the assessment, that they're a different level of assessment in terms of the danger they might pose?
Look, all of the individuals are in a different situation. They are not a cohesive group of people. That's why, for example, there is one person who is under legal restrictions from coming to Australia at all, even if the person was individually able to get themselves here. That as Australian citizens, it is possible for Australian citizens to make decisions to bring themselves home. And as I've said before, under the previous government, when the Liberals were in place, it wasn't simply women and children who made those decisions. Some men who had gone across to fight returned as well. But it is a different thing when you are being asked for the government to make a deliberate decision to assist individuals to come back, and we've made a decision that for these individuals we are not prepared to do that.
Their supporters contend that the Australian government needs to give the green light for them to leave the camp to the Syrian authorities. Do you agree that the Australian government is holding this process up?
No, they are asking for the Australian government to take active steps, and the Australian government is not willing to take active steps for this cohort.
I wanted to take you to some of the decisions you've had to make around the war in the Middle East. Can you clarify the current policy on visa approvals for Iranian nationals? Because there is a perception in the community that approvals have effectively stalled.
Okay, so anyone who has a decision about migration, if it's permanent migration, then in those situations the department doesn't check whether or not we think somebody may well be intending to stay, because the purpose of their visa is to stay. When somebody is making a decision to decide whether or not to grant a temporary visa, then my department always, for anywhere in the world, has to weigh up, is it genuinely temporary? Is the individual genuinely likely, after being in Australia, before they reach the end of the visa, to return home? Across the world, wherever conflict breaks out, it becomes harder to get a temporary visa for this exact reason. Because under the Migration Act, if the visa is not being sought for a genuine temporary purpose, then you end up effectively with the Australia making a temporary decision but getting a permanent outcome, because the person then doesn't return. That's effectively how we have to decide about every single temporary visa situation in the world. So when conflict breaks out anywhere in the world, including Iran, it becomes harder to get a temporary visa.
Your electorate has the highest concentration of Lebanese Australians in the country. How do you respond to those criticisms from the community that you and the Prime Minister haven't provided enough of a meaningful public response to your constituents who are grieving this ongoing conflict?
Well, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a time when the Prime Minister was asked and didn't call for any ceasefire to be extended to Lebanon. We've constantly called for ceasefire in Lebanon, constantly. And people are watching horrific scenes in Lebanon. You have, even without the military conflict, the fact that so many people have had to migrate temporarily from the south to the north is causing a huge humanitarian burden on Lebanon at an incredibly difficult economic time for Lebanon as well. So there is a humanitarian consequence even before you get to the bombings and the death and the killings. So this is why we've been clear about the need for a ceasefire the entire time.
Just finally, I wanted to take you to something in your arts portfolio, which is of great interest to our audience. Some Australian games like Hollow Knight have recently had global success after the industry almost collapsed in the early 2000s. So what is your government going to do to support these small-scale studios? Is an area that you expect to pour more funding into? We know there's a budget approaching.
Yeah, look, when we released the cultural policy revive at the start of 2023, we made a big shift in how Australia funds screen. So previously screen was viewed as movies and TV, and we said, no. A whole lot of people now, for screen, they're playing games, and that's how they're interacting there as well. So Screen Australia now has significant funding for this games industry, and similarly there's a digital tax offset that we've established. Because for a whole lot of people now, when you're looking at a screen, you're interacting directly with it. And these games, it's not like some old, you know, when I was growing up where it was an Atari or some very clumsy system. There are serious creative workers who have incredible imagination that goes into these games. There can be actors involved, there are artists involved, there's a whole lot of work that happens in these, and we wanted the industry to take off, and that's exactly what we're watching now.
So should they be expecting more investment to come?
Look, the cultural policy that we've already released is delivering real dividends, and I'm very excited about what's already happening.
Minister, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Hannah. See ya.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.